Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 157, Missouri Tigers and Arkansas Razorbacks preview, recorded Thursday, August 26th, 2015. Tonight, the roundtable looks at two teams as they break down the Missouri Tigers and the Arkansas Razorbacks. Is Pinkel's Tigers getting the respect they deserve since joining the SEC? Or has their good fortune been an opportunity of timing and placement? Listen as Shane Bailey, Nick Jones, and Britton Burton discuss. For Arkansas, can they build off the growth they had from last year to continue their upward progression and have a chance to compete for the West title? Listen to the roundtable discuss this and more on tonight's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. I believe we're at episode 157. So I'm your host, Shane Bailey, welcoming you back. We have been, I guess we're knee deep into it. We're not quite waist deep into the previews yet, even though we're right around the corner from the actual football taking place. So by the end of this week, I guess we will fully be waist deep, and by next week we'll be covered up, because football will be starting less than, or I guess, just over a week from today. So lots of things to discuss. We've covered a number of the programs, both East and West. You can go back and check those out on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, wherever you want to go, or where you found this. So we're glad you've stumbled upon us. So like I said, I'm your host, Shane Bailey. I've got joining me tonight, Nick Jones. Welcome, Nick.
Good to be here, and good to have Britton back. Not to steal your thunder, but
no,
haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah, Britton disappeared. I told him he was the Baltimore Colts of podcast hosts, and he just took off up and out of the night without telling anybody to another state. But he couldn't disappear. We tracked him down, and got him back on the show. So welcome back, Britton.
Very glad to be here. It's been too long. I'm still in SEC territory, just barely, now that Missouri has joined the SEC, because I'm in the Kansas City area, but thrilled to be back on SEC SRT.
Well, we're glad to have you, and it's funny that you know, it was kind of, I didn't even put two and two together since you're in Missouri, and that's the first one we're going to do. I know that that's not your allegiance, and so we will do that team, I believe, tomorrow. So, glad that you can bring some perspective from that side of the SEC. It's been lacking, so we're going to get a new side of how Missouri's looked at, I think. And it might be how we think they are perceived. Who knows? But we'll look at those folks. We'll also take a look at we'll stay on the other side of the Mississippi and deal with the Arkansas Razorbacks. And talk about that program as well tonight. The two teams that are poised to compete for each side, East and West there. Depending on who you ask, you know, some believe or get respect and others don't. But they both have the opportunity to fight and claw and scrape to work for a title here tonight. So we will talk about both of those programs. Nick, which one you want to cover first? We'll let you pick tonight.
Let's go with Missouri. I've got the sheet in front of me, and you know, let's stay with Britton's native state now, which still sounds weird to say, but how about that?
All right, so we'll start with Rodney Dangerfield. I mean Gary Pinkel's Missouri Tigers, right? No respect.
No respect.
We'll get started. Is that the way it's perceived out there in the land of Missouri?
Yes, it absolutely is. You know, in this day and age of podcasting, you're able to listen to what you're used to listening to no matter where you live. So I haven't listened to a ton of local sports talk, but I've definitely tried to catch some. And they're also Royals crazy right now for good reason, so they talk a lot about that. But when they do talk Missouri college football, there is some angst up here. And some of it's understandable. They do, you know, there is a lack of respect, a lack of are these guys really real? But they're upset about it. You know, one specific example, it was just about a week ago, was one of the local hosts was just livid that anyone could even think of picking Tennessee to finish second in the East over Missouri this year. And just like inconsolably upset about it. And I just thought it was a little bit strange. Like they just have, you know, a little bit of a chip on their shoulder about things. And it was kind of funny, to be honest.
Well, I mean, Tennessee's the same way here. I mean, being in the heart of an area that I do not care for as far as football, being the Tennessee Volunteers. I mean, they've always had a chip on their shoulder. They always believe that they're, you know, the best team or can win the SEC East. And they've even thought that, you know, through the Lane Kiffin years and the Dooley years. Now, they always go back after the fact and say that's not true. You know, we're rebuilding, or we just didn't have the right coach in place. But you listen to the radio every year, and their fan base believes it. Now, the difference between the two is that Missouri has proven 2 years in a row that they can win the SEC East in this decade, unlike the Tennessee Volunteers. And, you know, I don't know if you've heard this out there. I mean, you know, Butch Jones, probably before you left, was all on his horse about how great Tennessee was going to be this year. And there's been a little bit of backpedaling from you know, that side of the camp. You know, a few injuries and the thinness of their offensive line being shown. And you're not seeing that same vibrato coming from Butch Jones, in my opinion, about how they can compete for the East. They're more like a year away. And we've talked on another podcast that I believe Saban took them to a national championship in year three in his rebuilding, right?
Correct.
So it doesn't take more than 3 years if you do it right. And so that's a whole other podcast, and we're going to tee up Drew Young for this one. So it'll be fun to get that Tennessee side of things when we look at that. But, you know, I've said it before in another podcast as well. Fool me once, shame on me, you know, or whatever that saying is. Missouri is doing that. I mean, they have continued to prove us wrong. It's those folks that have been in the SEC or fans of the SEC for years and years. They've proven that they do belong here, and in some ways more than A&M, the way that A&M entered with all their glitter and fire into the SEC. Missouri's just the steady Eddie, racking off win after win, especially inside the conference, and proving that they do belong. Now, I think that last year they were the second best team in the East. Georgia, to me, in my opinion, was still the best team in the East. They got riddled with injuries, and when you lose so many key players as Georgia did, it becomes difficult to compete in a competitive SEC. It doesn't matter if you're in the East or West. When injuries start taking hold and start depleting your program, those are hard to recover from. And so Georgia hit that. They hit that wall and they hit that injury bug bad. If that wouldn't have happened, I don't see Missouri winning the East. And I don't know what the folks out there think or feel as how that would have went if they would have had a chance if Georgia were healthy.
Yeah, well, you know, it differs based on if you're talking to the fans who you know, let's be honest, we're all a little bit biased, or I guess observers who have a little bit of a you know, a fair opinion of how things might play out. To me, you make the Texas A&M comparison. To me, the difference between how the last two seasons have gone for those two programs has a lot to do with A&M being in the West and Missouri being in the East. And I don't want to take anything away from Gary Pinkel or what Missouri has done. You have to give them respect. No one thought, even though they were coming to the East, no one thought they would be able to produce at the level they have. But I think they've come in at a time when the East has been historically bad. The powerful programs that are typically great have not been very good. And Tennessee and Georgia has done what they seemingly always do, and that's disappoint, even though they have all the talent in the world and should be good. And Missouri's taken advantage in ways that we probably never thought they would, which is being really good defensively. But I still think if you swap them and put them in the West and A&M in the East, you know, Mizzou's not going to the SEC championships. We've seen how they stack up against the best programs from the West, and it hasn't been good. But again, not to take anything away from them, I just think they've taken advantage of a situation that has been presented to them, and all the props in the world for that. But I'm still, and maybe it's going to bite me, I still find it really hard to accept them or to bet on them as a true favorite at the beginning of a football season.
Nick, what do you think?
I think y'all are both right. I mean, you know, you have to play the hand you're dealt, and it's tough to say, especially from an SEC West perspective, especially from comparing the two teams that entered at the same time in Texas A&M and Missouri. That's an easy comparison, you would think, but then you look at the facts and you say, well, Texas A&M's having to play Alabama, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, LSU, Arkansas, week in and week out, and you see, as we get in later to the Missouri schedule, you know, I was sitting here looking at this schedule, and I'm like, wow, you know, even though I'm not sure if they can win a third straight SEC East title, you look at these teams that they're playing, and it kind of catches you by surprise just the way it stacks up. And if you get, you know, two of the weaker teams in the SEC West, like they have in previous years and like they possibly will this year, debatably, if you can say that there is a weak team in the SEC West, it can shake out again. And, you know, I'm conflicted. I still am. You know, Shane, you and I have talked on several previous podcasts this year that are we going to bet against Missouri again? Because they've already, like you said, they've already fooled us twice and made us look bad. So I'm trying to come to terms with the fact that the SEC East is more imbalanced than it's ever been before, the West being so great, and also the fact, like Britton said, that Georgia almost every single year consistently underperforms, no matter last year you can chalk it up to injury, but if you look at previous years, they've been there before, even in the years that, you know, in 2011 and 2012, 2011, when they played Alabama in the SEC title game, I guess that was 2012, that was a great football team. They took Alabama toe-to-toe, and a lot of people believe that they would have went on to win the national championship if they would have beaten Alabama. But at the same time, a lot of these teams, you can't convince me tonight, you know, a week and a half or a week before the season starts, that they are ready to compete. And if Missouri is ready to compete, and let's just say Georgia's quarterback situation doesn't work out and Tennessee is still too young and has too many injuries, there's a lot of room. You know, we talked about that earlier this preseason, how much room there is at the top of the SEC East, just like there's a ton of room at the second through fifth place positions in the SEC West. So not to say that people may think we're hating on Missouri, and give credit where credit's due, but at the same time, I think it could be like these last 2 years, just because of the SEC East, there's a lot of headroom, there's a lot of upside for Missouri.
So we say all that and look at that, and, you know, realistically, if Georgia does the same thing they've done over the last decade and underperform, as you all say, that opens the door for Missouri to win the East, in my opinion. And for a third straight year, do they go on to win the SEC? I don't think there's any way possible. But let's talk about their program and talk about what has changed there. I mean, they've had a number of changes that's taken place inside that program, as far as losing some key players for a third year in a row. That's got to take a toll at some point on your depth. Missouri could prove me wrong, but, you know, they've not been able to prove consistently that they've been able to rebuild and perform. And just, you know, like the Alabama in the West, where one man's down, the next guy's stepping up and taking his place, and they barely miss a beat because they have the depth. I don't see that depth in Missouri. Britton, what are you seeing and hearing over there, and am I off base with that?
Well, I tend to agree with you. I think that the real Missouri is somewhere in between what they were that first year when they were, like, you know, 4-8, didn't go bowling, and what they've been the last 2 years. And you kind of hit it on the head. It's because they don't recruit at the same level that the rest of the SEC does. This is part of the reason that Gary Pinkel is one of the better coaches in the country because he doesn't recruit at the same level as the SEC. So he's clearly very good at player development. And it's a similar conversation to what we were saying last year when they lose Michael Sam and Coney Ealy. And you're like, you know, how could they lose two super productive defensive line studs and expect to compete at the same level? And then along came Shane Ray and Marcus Golden, who were outstanding last year. And now those guys are both gone. And then they also had a defensive tackle with was in an automobile accident. And they're starting basically all freshmen and sophomores on the defensive line. And it's like, you don't see the evidence in the recruiting to say, well, they're just going to plug 3 5 stars in and be okay. So it's hard for you to reconcile their ability to replace guys in the way that they did last year on a consistent basis. Again, it will come down to player development. But, you know, they lost a ton of defensive linemen. They lost a ton of receivers. The receiver is not necessarily that pain point in the SEC where you lose so many guys and you feel like you can't replace it. But defensive line certainly is. And last year they were able to replace it with guys that, you know, people outside of the Missouri fan base probably didn't know and hadn't heard of. And they're in that position again. So can they replace them? I lean towards no because of what we just talked about. But at the same time, is anybody willing to bet against Gary Pinkel and what they've done in the last 2 years?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Brendan. You know, one thing to bring up is obviously Dave Steckel is not there anymore as the defensive coordinator, taking a head job at Missouri State, I think. And part of me thinks, obviously, Pinkel's a great, you know, player developer. We've seen that before time and time again. But when you talk about how good those defensives have been, you know, it is reasonable to say that there could be a lack in player development, at least this season, because of Steckel's, leaving the program. At the same time, though, like you said, it's so hard, and you want to caution yourself because we can't name, you know, the Deshaun Hands or any of these other guys that are coming in, that really doesn't mean anything when it comes to Missouri because, you know, we had seen Shane Ray play before, but nobody believed that Shane Ray could be on a watch list or even in the final for, you know, a defensive player of the year for the SEC or even nationally. And by the end of the year last year, despite some of the troubles that he ran into, especially in the Alabama game, he was right there. And that's saying something. And, you know, they've got some guys, they've got talent, but like you said, they're freshmen, sophomores. I think they've got a JUCO transfer that we'll probably have to see some time. And, you know, one of the things that I think is going to be key is, to me, the offense has kind of diminished over time. I always thought that their best offensive performance was 2 years ago when they had a veteran quarterback. And last year, Matty Mock, you know, he proved that he could win games, but it was not pretty at times. And let's be truthful. All that matters, especially for Missouri or any of these other teams, it doesn't matter about your stat line. It doesn't matter how many interceptions you're throwing as long as you're winning games. Now, granted, interceptions normally don't win you many games, but Matty Mock proved last year, especially against Alabama, we saw it. That still is burned in my memory, the fact that it could have been Alabama's defense, probably was, but the fact that he could hit those big plays just about at any time in the game to keep them in it, and he did that several times last year. And if that big play ability is still there, even with three new receivers once again, they could be dangerous. But it's so tough because in a team that you rely on, you know, you're in baseball country now, I would equate it to something like the Cardinals do. I mean, the Cardinals can bring up three or four guys every single year to win a World Series that you've never even heard of, and then they'll go into oblivion or go somewhere else and they won't be nearly as good because it's all system ball. And I love system ball, but it's just so hard to predict.
Yes and no. I mean, I like where you try to go with St. Louis, but, you know, St. Louis has one of the best farm systems in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, that's true.
Even though we don't know who some of those players are because, A, I don't like the St. Louis Cardinals. I'm a Cubs fan. B, I mean, you're looking at, you know, single A, and you've got East Coast ball, and you've got summer league ball, and you got double A, and you got triple A. I mean, unless you're a hardcore baseball player, when you've got 10,000 draft rounds per year, and and every high school player in America basically getting drafted somewhere and slotted, it's impossible to know unless you live, eat, sleep, and breathe baseball how good their farm system is. But St. Louis, year after year, has built that farm system. So they're, to me, a St. Louis, as much as I don't like to give them this, is they're more like an Alabama because it's the next guy up mentality with that farm system. Now, I will agree with you with the offense. I think this year for Missouri, where last year their defense won them games, this year their offense, I think will have to be the one that can win them some ball games. You talked about the loss of Steckel as defensive coordinator. You know, they brought in Odom from Memphis, and you know, I was quickly looking back at Memphis's scores, and defensively, when they started playing a good team, it wasn't pretty for them, even though they had a good win-loss record. I mean, they beat somebody like Austin Peay, but they get, you know, beat by UCLA. They beat Middle Tennessee, but they're going to lose to an Ole Miss. You know, they're going to win Cincinnati, but they're going to lose to Houston. So anytime you get a decent program that they're up against, you know, they struggled defensively. You throw that into a mix with Missouri, where you're in somewhat of a rebuilding program. You've got a coach that goes from a 3-4 to a 4-3 mentality. Who knows what you're going to get on the defensive side of the ball at Missouri this year? You do have Matty Mock as an anchor on the offensive side of the ball, but he had some inconsistencies last year. I mean, there were times you looked at Matty Bach and you didn't know what he was doing, and then all of a sudden a light switched on about midseason and he became an incredible quarterback. But at the beginning of last season, he was a very erratic quarterback if my memory serves correctly.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the interesting things about – it's interesting that we're doing Arkansas and Missouri at the same time tonight, because, the big question – in the entire SEC this year is the quarterback position. It seems like every team has, if not major question marks, at least minor question marks, who's going to be the starter. There's a few teams that are the exception, and these are two of those teams, Auburn being one of the other ones, that don't have a question, at least in terms of who the starter is, yet both teams still kind of have a, do you really trust this guy even though you know he's your starter? And Mock was... he could make the spectacular play. We talked about this last year. He can make the spectacular play, but he doesn't make the easy plays on a routine basis at all. You know, he's not a high completion percentage guy. He was right around 50% for his entire career that he's been at Mizzou. And he just, you know, they don't ever really stay on schedule offensively. I mean, they were 92nd in total yardage last year offensively. And when you think of a Missouri team, you don't think of them being nearly a 100th in offense, yet in the top 25, top 30 defensively, and that's kind of what they've become coming to the SEC. And I think a lot of that has to do with they're playing some SEC East teams that aren't really good offensively, and so they don't need to be great offensively to beat them, and their defense is able to hang with them. Again, I don't want to take shots here because they've been good defensively. But the point I was leading off with was Matty Mock is, yeah, he's your starter, and that's great compared to a lot of the other quarterback situations in the conference. But I still don't know that I trust him to win big games over and over again, even though he is capable of making the big play, and they won big games last year. A lot of times it felt like they were winning in spite of him, not because of him.
But this year I think they have to win because of him.
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's going to be more pressure on him because, again, unless Pinkel works his magic, he's rubbing his magic rock over there, there's every reason to believe they take at least a little bit of a step back defensively and are not going to be as dynamic there. And so you've got to score more. They lost all the receivers. You know, again, Mock has to be the one to make it happen. Now, they've got most of their offensive line back. They had a very productive running back in Hansbrough, who's back and healthy again. So maybe they rely on the run game a little bit more. But, again, you don't think of Missouri as an Auburn type of pound-the-rock team either. It's a spread win-with-your-quarterback team. And I just don't really trust Mock. Maybe that's just me, but I don't.
Nick, you got anything you want to add before we try to figure out how many wins they're going to have?
No, I mean, you know, I'm with you, Shane. If they're going to do it this year, they're going to have to win with offense. That's something that sticks in my mind from years and years ago when they were, you know, 5+ years ago when they were in the Big 12. They had to win with offense because hardly any defense could step up and stop a Big 12 offensive attack. But I think Britton's right to be apprehensive to say that Matty Mock could be the guy. And that was a really good point that Britton made because, you know, if you're an Alabama fan right now or if you're a Georgia fan, you would love to have be in the position that Kentucky or that Missouri has and be returning one of the only, you know, experienced starters in the league. But an inconsistent Matty Mock is not much better than an unproven quarterback at any of these other schools. But, you know, he has the arm. He has the natural talent. It's just going to be the fact if he can, you know, take the bull by the horns and be able to get this offense to the next level and right some of the wrongs the defense could have if our projections are right.
All right, so let's kind of look at the schedule. And you'll have to forgive me. When you get so far out west, I don't even know how good a team is. How good is BYU supposed to be this year?
Yeah, that's one of the questions I have, too. I mean, you see BYU, and you kind of automatically think that's a tough out-of-conference. I know they have Taysom Hill, who was, you know, sort of a dark horse Heisman contender, I believe, is still there. So certainly that's not a pushover, but I also don't know if they're a top 25 type of team like they have been, you know, a few times over the past decade.
Nick, do you have any insight to BYU?
You know, not. I know they're playing a really tough schedule this year. They've got several out-of-conference teams. You know, not knowing anything about them, you can normally expect BYU to definitely be a bowl team, probably around 7 to 8 wins. But they do have a tough schedule this year, and Missouri is part of that. So, but one thing that shocked me is I don't really know the backstory about it, but it's so late in the season. I mean, this is like the second-to-last game, or the third-to-last game, but in the season, which is extremely rare for an SEC school to be playing an out-of-conference game that late.
And it's a home game for you, Britton. It's in Kansas City.
Yeah, I saw that. So one poll I looked up has them right outside the top 25, the top team in others receiving votes. I'm not sure how credible that is, but, you know, they're certainly not a pushover. You're looking at a top 30, 35 team, most likely.
I've got one that's got them ranked 46.
Oh, okay.
But still, you're in the top 50. I mean, when you look at it's that you're going to be dominated by, you know, three programs. That's still a good, strong program to be up against. I mean,
it's not an FCS team.
No, it's not that. Yeah. So, I mean, for example, Vanderbilt, who's going to kick the season off, probably with a loss. Against the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, they're ranked 74th in this poll. So, you know, in comparison, BYU is a pretty good team. They did have 8 wins last year. They lost their bowl game. It was a double overtime loss to Memphis, the same team that the you know, new defensive coordinator for Missouri has. So, but you're right. That's way down the list of games for them. They start off with what, Southeast Missouri State? Does that sound right?
Yeah, that's correct. So they've got a pretty soft open. You would be shocked if they're not 3-0. And sorry, Shane, but you would think they'd be 4-0 after September 26th at Kentucky.
If they want to compete for the East, they're going to be 4-0.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, just looking at the schedule as a whole, I mean, this is about as good as you can hope for with an SEC schedule. You know, Nick mentioned earlier, you get who are probably, at least they're picked right now, to be the 6th and 7th place teams in the West. So you miss all the toughest West opponents. Now that's, I think both of those teams are still going to be good. So it's not easy, but their out of conference isn't tough. If BYU's the toughest game, that's not too bad. And they get Florida at home. They get Tennessee at home. So this is, you know, compared to what I'm looking at on Alabama's schedule, I mean, this looks great.
Yeah, they go to Kentucky. They go to Vanderbilt. The toughest road game for them is going to Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and talking about that Georgia game, I mean, you look at it, I mean, they could easily slip up, and depending on how good Florida or South Carolina is, if South Carolina has a better year than last year, but if you're a Missouri fan, you've got to be hoping that you're going into that Georgia game sitting pretty. You know, you're going to be 5-1 or 6-0, and, you know, to be mid-October by then, that's a pretty good place to – you're three games into the conference, you've already got, you know, three traditional SEC East games in the way, or, you know, out of the way, and going into Sanford Stadium, as hard as that may be, you don't know what Georgia's going to look like right there, and especially after Georgia's going to have Alabama coming up around that time, definitely a pretty easy schedule up until that point.
I mean, I look at it that if they want to have what the kind of year they expect to have, they're gonna need to go 6-0 right there.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a loss when they get to Georgia, and I think they lose to one of the two West opponents, whether it's Mississippi State or Arkansas. I think they have a good chance to split that West. And so you're gonna have two losses right there sitting out there. You're smiling, Britton. Are you agreeing or?
Yeah, I actually agree. I think they feel like a 9-3 team to me. It was interesting listening to one of the previews. I don't remember if it was South Carolina or someone else, where Nick said he kind of picks a number that feels right and then tries to back his way in. And I was like, you know, I've never thought of it that way. I've always just gone through and picked. And usually after I pick, I'm like, that doesn't feel right. They're supposed to be an 8-win team. And so I'm going to try it Nick's way now. And this feels like a 9-win team. The problem is when you get to that schedule, it's like, oh, man, finding three losses is tough. And that's kind of what we've been talking about with why they've been able to win the East. But to me, it comes down to I feel like at Georgia is not a guaranteed loss, but I feel like that's a loss. And then I'm the same as you, Shane. I think they split the Arkansas-Mississippi State series. And they split Tennessee and South Carolina, meaning they lose one of those in each of those two pairs.
Exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm going. You could even throw Florida into that South Carolina-Tennessee pair and make it a triumvirate where I think they lose one of those three. It's just difficult to pick which one because the East is so uncertain.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, I went 10-2, but you could easily go 9-3 like you guys are talking about. I think one of the things that swayed me that direction is South Carolina and Florida very early in the season, especially for Florida. You look at them, I mean, they could be a completely different team by the end of the year, either on the better end of the spectrum or the worse end. But at the same time, you look at they get Mississippi State at home. That Arkansas game is a little interesting to me. It is on the road, but I think it's so late. I always look at, you know, when it is during the year, and a lot of things could shake out. Missouri could end up being much worse than we think they're going to be, or Arkansas may not be what they're advertised to be, as we're going to talk about in a little bit. But I would definitely say that they split one of the SEC West games, just, you know, chicken scratch. I had them losing to Mississippi State, but I don't know. I think it's really interesting for me if that Florida or South Carolina game was much later in the year, especially after their bye. It could be very different for those two teams. But being early in the season with how much turnover Florida's going to have and then South Carolina, as we talked about earlier, you know, it's still kind of unknown. They did name Connor or Mitch their starter, but I don't know. You know, like you said, it's just even when you try to find these losses on there with, you know, teams like UConn and BYU being your toughest out-of-conference game, the schedule is very favorable.
Yeah, well, and from a balance perspective, I was just look. Mississippi State has the same bye week, so they both have the bye before they play each other. So you know, that kind of levels out that extra week off because they both have that. I say that I like that 9-3 number, but you know, you look at the way the East is, and the uncertainty that's out there. We've already talked about South Carolina and how. Who knows what Spurrier's got up his sleeve and what he's got going cooking down in South Carolina. If he's got another 9-10 win program, well, that could be a buzzsaw when they get the Gamecocks. And that happens pretty early in the season. You know, what happens if Kentucky continues to improve? That's not necessarily an easy win on their part. I'm not going to say that they can, that's just an automatic loss, but the homer in me says that Kentucky, if they continue to make strides the way they did last year and continue that on this year, they could beat almost any team in the East any given Saturday if things fall in the right place. And we've seen it time and time again that those things can fall in place at the blink of an eye for a particular team. So you could turn around and go from a 9 or 10 win team to a 7 win team in the bat of an eye in the SEC East. And we know that can happen with any team in the West. So I can't anoint them the SEC East champions right now. I do feel like I like that 9-win number more than I like a 7-win number, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that they could lose to both Arkansas and Mississippi State, lose to two SEC East opponents, Georgia being one of them, and South Carolina, Florida, or Tennessee be the other one. Now all of a sudden, you're fighting for your life just to stay in the middle of the pack of the SEC East this year.
Yeah, but it feels like that would just like we don't think they could go 11-1 or 12-0 because everything would have to break right for them. It feels like everything would kind of have to break wrong for them to only win 7 this year, to me anyway.
Yeah, but everything's broke right for them so many times. It's like Auburn. You know, things have been breaking right for Auburn more times than not in some crazy outcomes and crazy games. They come out at the end of the time when they're showing their cards, they're the winner. Well, sooner or later, Lady Luck loses. You know, she gets kind of tired of being on your side. And so, you know, who knows what – and that's the funny thing about this. And while it's improbable, it's not impossible in my opinion.
And one of the things for me, too, is when I look at Georgia, not to ruin our Georgia preview, but when you look at Georgia, they have Alabama and Auburn on the schedule this year. And those could easily be 2 losses. It could be 2 wins, but it could also be a split. And that really does not bode very well for Georgia when it comes to an SEC East schedule, because if you drop both those games and, you know, get shown up by Florida or Kentucky or South Carolina, like we've talked about, if Missouri pulls off the win, I think that's a lot of the reason why, you know, people have Tennessee creeping up there and people have Missouri in the, you know, right behind Georgia. And that's the thing that really, I don't want to say that I don't think Missouri could win it outright, but with the schedule that Georgia has, especially their crossover games this year, there is not a lot of room for mistakes on their part. And, I mean, not to say that, you know, Missouri could very well mess up their season very quickly, but there's a little bit more room for mistakes when it comes to Missouri. They don't have to win that Georgia game. And I think, you know, I may be wrong, but depending on how the tiebreak works, I think a 9-win team, especially with all 3 of their losses coming in the SEC, they could win the East.
Yeah, that's a really good point on the schedule. Georgia's is brutal this year with that West crossover. And, you know, I feel like just like we are kind of scared to bet against Missouri and Gary Pinkel because we've seen what they've done the past 2 years when we were all counting them out and didn't think they could do it. For that same reason, it's hard not to, or it's impossible for me to eliminate them from the possibility of winning the East because we're kind of counting on Georgia to be that team that does it. And we're all used to what Georgia has done the last 5 to 7 years where they just find a way to choke it. They're the Clemson of the SEC. And for that reason, I can't definitively just say there's no way Missouri winds up winning the East again. It feels like they won't. It feels like they shouldn't.
But, doesn't mean they will. I mean, it could.
Exactly. It doesn't mean they won't. So,
I don't know where to go with this because they're the hardest team, I think, of all the teams that we look at because even A&M, you see more of what to expect from them, and there's less uncertainty. You know, you look at Missouri's roster and you look at their schedule and you see one thing, but who knows what actually happens when it plays out onto the field. And that's the great thing about the football, and we will find out shortly exactly what Missouri brings to the table this year. So I think we all believe 9 or 10 wins, great possibility to actually compete for the East again. It's going to be all up to Georgia to hand them their fate, I think, is the consensus here. It's Georgia's to lose, Missouri's to win. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's – I don't want to speak for Nick, but I think Tennessee will have a little something to say about it, but it feels like it's – yeah, that's well said. It's Georgia's to lose, and that might be what happens, and by default someone else has to win it.
All right. So we will close the book on the Missouri Tigers. Stay west of the Mississippi for the SEC. We'll flip sides and go to the west and talk the Arkansas Razorbacks. Britton, I'll let you kick us off on this one. I know you have some friends that have a vested interest in the Razorbacks. So, what do we expect after the turnaround really started to take place last year with Arkansas? You really started to see things fall into place with that program. You know, a program that struggled to get wins in the SEC finally was able to overcome that and put some good quality wins together and ended up with a really fine end of the season. And you saw continual improvement every year. Are we going to expect to see some of those same leaps and bounds improvements this year from the Arkansas Razorbacks?
So to me, Arkansas is one of the most interesting teams on the west side, and maybe in the whole SEC. There's a million storylines on the west, but you know, Arkansas, it's so interesting how much of sort of a media darling they have been in this offseason and leading up to the regular season when you consider that they were, you know, 7-6 last year. And if you just looked at that record and looked at some of their statistics, you'd think, why are people so in love with this team? But then when you watched last season, we said over and over again, they're going to get one of these games. They're going to get one of these games. They were, you know, every single game, it seemed like it was a one-score game, a one-possession game, and they just couldn't find a way to get over the hump. You're seeing the team really take the shape that Bielema wants them to take, which is so interesting and makes the SEC even more interesting because we now have this huge split of the Alabamas, LSUs, Arkansas of the world who are run the ball, although Alabama wasn't that much last year, but, you know, run the ball, be powerful on offense, hold it, play good defense, and then the spread, speed it up, Auburns of the world, Tennessees of the world. So it just makes it so interesting. But it's still a little hard for me to buy into the amount of hype that there is surrounding Arkansas this season when you consider that, yes, they improved vastly last year, but they still lost a lot of games. And the strength of their team was that defense last year that was very, very good, and they lost a lot of folks off that. We talked about Missouri losing some really good defensive linemen. You know, Arkansas had two in particular that were all SEC-level performers, and Trey Flowers and Darius Filon. So, I have question marks. They do have most of their offensive line coming back, which there's no team in the country that is better suited to be successful when that is the case than a Brett Bielema team. But, you know, there's lots of questions for me still. It's hard for me to buy all the way into the hype, again, because they're on the West. If I hate to keep coming back to this, but if they're in the East, I'd be buying stock in Arkansas all day. But I still am just not really ready to go all the way with Arkansas when I think they still have some weaknesses and haven't really proven that they can get over the hump on a consistent basis.
Yeah, and, you know, that's my sentiment as well. One of the things to me that is so interesting, and some people can probably, you know, figure this out, that I really love seeing a team like Arkansas. I was a really big fan of how Alabama played. I think the offense was great last year, but I really love this ground and pound style offense. But one of the things is, I mean, we saw Arkansas and Bielema essentially sell out to winning time of possession against Alabama, and they almost won it. They really should have won that game. I mean, you look at how poorly Alabama performed. It was a sloppy game. It was in the rain. I think they had a rain delay and all these things. But at the same time, Burt doesn't care how he's going to win these games. It's all about just grinding it out and, you know, scoring three more points than your opponent. But the thing to me is, if that defense slacks just a little bit, and one of my biggest things is, you know, Shane, I mentioned, I think it was the USC, I slipped this in, talking about how Arkansas is once again going to have an amazing 1-2 punch at halfback. And that's something that really works in these programs. It's worked with Bielema at Wisconsin, you know, even with the guys that he developed. Mike Gordon, you saw last year, was a product of his system. Obviously, he was gone. But losing Jonathan Williams is just a really big gash to me. I think Collins, yeah, Collins can play, there's no doubt. But if you're going to run the ball 40 and 50 times a game like we expect Arkansas to do, one back can't shoulder that. We've seen that at Alabama. Nick Saban would not let a Heisman Trophy winner and Mark Ingram carry the ball more than 25 or 30 times a game because it's an injury risk, but also players just can only go for so long. It's a conditioning issue. But if that defense slips just a little bit, this can really affect this system because we've seen this with Alabama time and time again under the Nussmeiers and under the McElwains. If Alabama got down big, you see that game that Alabama played a couple years ago at Texas A&M, and how great of a comeback that was, but it was everything Alabama had to go toe-to-toe with Johnny Manziel on the second, on the rematch, you know, after losing to him the year before, and they barely hung on to that game. And the problem is, for a team like Arkansas, especially, they do have Allen coming back, who I think could be a very much improved player, but if you don't have developed skill players like Alabama's had in the past, and you solely rely on running the ball, if you get down, you know, say 14 to Texas A&M or maybe to an Alabama, it's tough to get back in the game. And I don't think that Arkansas is there yet for that point of view, but at the same time, I think they easily have the best offensive line, you know, returning, depending on what Alabama brings back and stuff. But I think they have the best offensive line returning in the SEC. And
well, they probably have one of the largest offensive lines in the country.
I mean, yeah. I've seen a stat, they would be like, I think they'd be like the second or third heaviest even in the NFL. But like Britton said, you know, that is really important for a Bielema team. So, you know, although they have a great offensive line, they have to have a great offensive line. So, you know, that's the thing to me. The Trey Flowers and Filon thing, those were two guys. They were probably the biggest surprises for me on the defensive side of the ball of any SEC team. And, you know, they were, I hate saying this, but they were a much better than their record last year. Like Britton said, they were going to, one of these teams they were going to catch up to and beat them. They finished the year pretty well, but there's not a lot of room for error on this schedule.
Well, I think of this Arkansas program, and what I think of is the Ole Miss program, I think 2 years ago, when we looked at that program, as much hype as there was around that program and as much talent was on that program, the one thing that they did not have was depth. And so one key injury here, one key injury there, all of a sudden destroyed your chances to have that stellar year. And you saw that play out with Ole Miss because the year before, while they were thin, they pretty much went through the whole season unscathed with major injuries. They had some nicks and bruises, but they didn't have those players out for extended periods of time. If that were to happen, especially on the defensive side of the ball with Arkansas this year, as thin as they are defensively, I don't know if they're going to have the offensive power to play catch-up. Because while Allen's got a strong arm, who's going to be the person that's going to catch that ball? That's a question mark at receiver. And if you don't have that deep threat, you know, the offensive line can give your quarterback as much time as he wants, but if you don't have a receiver that can get downfield and get open, it doesn't matter. Because then all of a sudden you get what's called a coverage sack because the offensive line can only hold so long, or you're going to get an eligible man downfield, or something's going to happen because the play can't stay up that long time after time after time. So there's going to be some hiccups that they're going to have to overcome there. And if they can stay relatively healthy, especially on that defensive side of the ball, they've got a really good chance to play and be a strong contender in the West. I don't think they still have enough horses to win the West, But I do think that they have the ability to beat some teams in the West this year.
Well, the wide receiver thing is definitely a good point. You know, I don't know, other than Missouri, who we just talked about, who's bringing all new people in, I don't know if there's another receiving core in the conference that is more of a no-name, you know, group. I don't know if anyone outside of Arkansas fans could name the receivers unless they had those names in front of them. But if there's any style of play and any coach that can sort of mitigate the lack of explosive receivers, you know, it's Bielema. I mean, and they do have a really good tight end in Hunter Henry, who caught a lot of balls last year. And through Bielema's history, I don't know, you know, maybe Nick Toon was there at Wisconsin, I think, when he was there. But I can't really name any, like, big play receivers that they've had. And so I don't know if that will really affect them, the fact that they don't have an explosive playmaker out there.
Yeah, but what happens if they get down two scores?
Well, that's what I was going to say. And it was kind of what Nick was talking about. If you wed the, you know, the lack of explosive playmakers, a quarterback who, kind of like we talked about, is the unquestioned starter, but you don't really trust to win games for you, with a very possible regression defensively. Man, you know, the way college football is going, it's an offensive sport, more so than even the NFL, more so than college football has ever been. It's a lot more difficult to run the ball and play good defense now than it was 5 to 10 years ago. Unless you are at least somewhat able to produce explosive plays in the passing game. And so I think that's going to be your storyline for most of the year, is their defense going to be good enough to keep in touch, you know, to keep contact, because they're still just not going to be an explosive offense.
And, you know, going off of that, this is exactly what you said, but with the SEC West, this has the, you know, Alabama was very explosive last year, and it's going to be tough for them to duplicate that, especially losing Blake Sims and Amari Cooper. But you look at the Texas A&Ms, you look at the Ole Misses, you look at the Auburns, even Alabama, you know, if we believe that Kiffin can do, you know, somewhat duplicate last year's results, this is the most explosive we've ever seen the SEC West when it comes to offense. And, you know, sure, Arkansas can match up with Alabama and play ground and pound, and they can do it with LSU. But outside of those two teams, you're not going to really play that style of football week in and week out. And I think it's a very real possibility that any of those four or five teams that I just mentioned could get up 14 points, you know, two scores. And like we're talking about, the game could be over before it even starts.
Yeah. We have seen Wisconsin score quickly, but every time that happened, it was an 80-yard run,
right,
from scrimmage. So I can't say that it's impossible, because if that offensive line opens up a large enough hole and they get through the secondary, you know, Collins could potentially do that. But you can't rely on that as the way you're going to come back from a two-score deficit or a 17-point deficit all of a sudden, where you're going to need three scores to get back in the game, especially when you're talking third quarter and your whole style of offense is control the clock. Well, the clock is not your friend at that point. Mm-hmm. And so, that's their biggest – some of their biggest issues. You look at their schedule as we try to figure out how many wins we're going to look at with this program. You know, their non-conference schedule is fairly favorable, I would, in my opinion. I mean, you look at UTEP, Toledo, Texas Tech to get us started. You know, Kingsbury is doing good things at Tech, but are they going to be a top-notch program? That should be a win for Arkansas, I would think.
Yeah, I would think so, too. I remember last year looking at this. Texas Tech had a pretty good 2013 season, and we kind of pinpointed this. Arkansas, who went to Lubbock last year, this game is sort of this is a huge game for Arkansas' season, because if they lose this, there's every chance in the world they don't become bowl eligible, and that turned out to be true, as they just barely were bowl eligible. But then they also dominated Texas Tech, and it was kind of like Texas Tech started this dip and had a pretty bad year, and Arkansas started this ascension that has led to all the hype this year. And I don't think there's any reason to believe that Texas Tech is going to be a much different opponent this year. So if you know, it's a Big 12 school, so that's something. But if that's your toughest out of conference game, which it is in this case, you know, that's a schedule I would take.
So then they get to face a team that I don't think even leaves their state. Is that correct? Did they leave the state once, Texas A&M? Maybe once. It's very little that they have to leave the actual state of Texas for their season, because they have this game, and then I think they have another neutral site game in Houston, maybe.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then
the first five games are in Texas, and the first one being Arizona State and Houston.
Ah, okay.
And then they have what, the other three non-conference games are Texas teams.
Yep.
So they don't get to leave the state very much. But they get Texas A&M at Arlington, so it's a neutral site game.
You know, to me, this is, like we've talked about, this is a really interesting game. Just like Alabama in the past couple of years, you look at how they're going to struggle. And to me, I'm not completely buying in on Texas A&M right now. I know we've talked a little bit about them. I think you guys already covered them. But to me, right now, today, sitting here today, Arkansas wins this game. It is a neutral site game, despite being in Arlington, in Dallas, in Jerry World. But the thing that I look at here is, you know, you have Tennessee coming up next. But the thing is the polar opposite of what this season could be for Arkansas for the first five games leading into that Alabama than it was last year. You know, you look at Arkansas got the very rare conference opening game the first weekend, you know, was forced to play against Jeremy Johnson, but
at Auburn, no less. It wasn't even a home
game. And lost pretty bad. And like Britton said, it took a couple weeks for them to kind of get their feet under him. And, you know, like you've said, Shane, as well, they weren't really there last year. Questionably there this year. So really getting off to a good start, that's what I'm kind of banking this on, and I think that's what a lot of these guys that, like Britton has said, the media darling that they've become, a lot of people see this potential of them coming into the Alabama game with a very favorable start, but they could easily lose that Texas A&M game as well.
I'm going to give them the win. I'm following your logic, and I did that when that hit me square in the face.
I really hope this works out because everybody's doing it now. So.
Yeah. Well, you kind of do it in your head, but you've never really you didn't look at it that way. And so, you know, I think there's four losses for Arkansas this year. I think they can be an 8-win program. And so when you look at that, you go, where are the losses going to come? And so, in my opinion, I think it's going to be Alabama and Auburn. I think it's going to be one of the Mississippi schools, and then it's going to be when they go to Death Valley at LSU. There's your four losses. And so the rest of them, you're going to say you're going to win. You're going to split the state of Mississippi, and you're going to beat Tennessee. You're going to beat UT Martin. You're going to beat Missouri. So when you look at it in those aspects, I think that they are solidly an 8-win program. Where do you guys see?
I struggle getting them over 7. Not that I don't think they can, or it's not that they can't do it. But with that at Tennessee game having to be probably the 8th win, because I tend to agree that I think at Alabama, against Auburn and at LSU, it's hard for me to see them winning those three games. And so then you've got at Ole Miss and Mississippi State coming to Arkansas. If one of those kind of agree with you, it's hard for me to envision them beating both Mississippi schools. So that means you've got to go at Tennessee to get to that 8th win. And I don't know. I don't know. Shane, I haven't been in Nashville now, and it was interesting to hear you say that Butch Jones is backpedaling a little bit. I haven't heard that being up here. And so I have been buying into Tennessee a little bit more this year, obviously, than the past decade or so. And with that being at Tennessee, if Tennessee is what I think they can be, that I would definitely not call that an automatic win for Arkansas.
Yeah, and to me, like we said last year, like y'all brought up, I think that was an excellent point, how we pegged one game being kind of the linchpin to them being bowl eligible. I think this year you're going to have to pick one of these road games to get to that 8-win season, which would, you know, barely be an improvement over last year. And look at the draw. I mean, the only other thing that, I mean, I'm, you know, obviously they alternate with Mississippi State and Ole Miss, but I mean, to me, Ole Miss could be a winnable game if it's in Fayetteville. LSU could be a winnable game if it's in Fayetteville. Tennessee is a very winnable game if it's in Fayetteville. But you look at those three road games, those are tough places to play. I mean, Tennessee's hard to beat in a down year at Neyland. LSU, you can never count on anything in a night game at LSU, which it could, you know, it might not, we don't know if it's a night game or not, but
at worst, it's going to be the middle of the day.
2:30, yeah.
Yeah, CBS game. It's not going to be an early game. We can guarantee that.
So,
especially with the SEC Network slate of extra night games.
And to me, it's just tough. I mean, I have them at 8 wins, but like Britton said, if it's that Tennessee game, and if it, let's just say, you know, they have trouble with Texas A&M, and that's the game in between Texas A&M and Alabama, it's going to be tough to get that win. I think they're very solidly a 7-6 team, but it's a much different storyline than last year was, because I think we all walked away from last season going, wow, you know, much like the media is saying today, you know, wow, what a great season they had. Bielema really turned it around. And not to say that Bielema, another 7-6 win, or, you know, 7-6 year is a bad year, but, you know, I mean, with what we're hearing in the media, I'm seeing people 9-10 wins. I mean, second, even maybe a sleeper for the SEC West. And if we're having trouble getting to 8 wins, that doesn't bode well.
Well, you know, it's interesting on SEC schedules. This is something we talk about every year in these previews. You always have that like murderer's row where of 3 or 4 games in a row that are, it's just, you look at the schedule and you think, that's brutal. I can't believe we have to do that. Arkansas has 2 of those.
Yep.
You know, starting September 26th with Texas A&M, in consecutive weeks, they go Texas A&M at Tennessee, at Alabama, then a bye week, and then Auburn. So that's, you know, that's 4 tough, tough games in 5 weeks. Then they catch a break with UT Martin on Halloween, and then they close with 4 tough, tough games in a row at Ole Miss, at LSU, and then Mississippi State and Missouri at home. And
Without
a bye that time. And Nick's point is well taken. It's really hard to imagine finding 10 wins there when you've got 2 stretches that are just murderer's row like that.
Yeah. Well, I know that I don't give the Tennessee Volunteers the credit that they might deserve, but you make a valid point that, you know, the 8 wins could easily become 8-4 could easily become 7-5. If Tennessee is a program that's got some legitimacy back to the program, and they are well on their way. It's just, you know, I need to see it being proven in realistic terms, not a fluke loss or a fluke win against a South Carolina program that they probably didn't deserve to win. When you're hanging your hat on that kind of a win, last year is your signature win beating South Carolina, when South Carolina started the season off just getting destroyed. It doesn't have the same tenor to it. And so, you know, I've not completely bought into the Tennessee Volunteers being able to compete for the East and be that program. So maybe they can prove me wrong. And if that's the case, then there's definitely a hiccup there when you hear Rocky Top being played. Or them cheering Rocky Top, which is kind of silly now. I think they do that after first downs, Britton.
Okay.
One half of the side of the stadium is going to yell Rocky, and the other is going to yell Top.
See, I don't hear these things anymore. They don't talk about that kind of stuff.
The things that drive us crazy. Hey, at least I don't have to hear that blasted song as much. So.
Yeah. Amen to that.
You never get to hear it anymore. How blessed are you?
Yeah, it's really weird being up here instead of Nashville, because Nashville's kind of the melting pot of SEC, you know. And I haven't seen an Auburn shirt. I haven't seen a Tennessee shirt or that terrible orange color anywhere. I haven't seen anything but Missouri and Kansas. So it's a different world up here.
That might be a little refreshing.
Yeah, I think it's kind of nice.
Well, guys, I think that's going to put a bow on these two teams. Is there anything else you guys want to add? I know Britton, people want to follow you. They can find you at RTR Britta on Twitter. Anything else you want to leave the folks with?
No, that's I'm good. It's good to be back. Football is almost here. If you look in your 10-day forecast on your phone, football is in the forecast. So that means it's the right time of year.
Nick, how about you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/thatnickjones. And, you know, Shane, I think I speak for us all. It was so much fun when we got all that, I guess you would say, hate from all those Texas A&M fans. So if you're listening to this right now, we'd love to hear from you, whether it's on YouTube or email or Twitter. Twitter's a great place for this. However you want to get in touch with us. If you're an Arkansas fan, if you're a Missouri fan, you still think we're disrespecting you, we'd love to hear it from you.
That's a good point. And now you are found on Bama Hammer still, some, correct?
Yep, BamaHammer.com. If you're an Alabama fan, great place to find your news. There's a lot of news sites out there, but our team does a really good job, you know, full-time football coverage. And, you know, if you want to support the fan-sided network, which Bama Hammer's a part of, if you're an SEC fan, they've got a site for you.
All right. Guys, thank you so much for being on here. Tomorrow we have – what did I say? Alabama and Kentucky. So we will be back here doing this once again. And until then, we will call this podcast done.